Welcome to Listen in Lubbock. I'm your host, Casey Ellingson. Today we're talking about the proposed Sanctuary City for the Unborn Ordinance that's now being brought to the public to vote on. The proposed ordinance is an attempt to essentially ban abortions within city limits. As it's written, it would allow for private parties to sue abortion providers or people who assist a woman in getting an abortion. So for example, if someone provides transportation services to an appointment for an abortion, they could be sued. And there's no statute of limitations on this, so this lawsuit could be brought on them at any time. A number of cities across Texas have adopted this ordinance, but Lubbock would be by far the largest and the only one that actually offers abortions among the bunch. Here to talk with me more about this is Sarah Self-Walbrick, our senior reporter. And later on in the show, Mary Tuma will join me from Austin to give an update on what's going on the state level regarding reproductive rights. Sarah, let's start from the beginning. Why was this ordinance brought up here?
So this all started last year when Planned Parenthood announced it was returning to Lubbock after closing in 2013. That's when anti-abortion advocates came in with their so-called Sanctuary City for the Unborn Ordinance. This ordinance intends to make it unlawful for any person to perform an abortion of any type and at any stage of pregnancy inside city limits. It's passed in several smaller, conservative Texas cities, but in most of these towns, a city council approved it and not a public vote. So Lubbock's really different in this group for a lot of different reasons.
Mm-hmm. And I think the last time I looked, there's definitely more than 20 cities that have this ordinance passed and adopted. Now, the landmark 1973 Supreme Court ruling of Roe versus Wade is still in place, which in very broad terms protects a woman's right to have an abortion. So what exactly was the path for this ordinance coming to a public vote, if that's still in place?
So this all was possible because of Lubbock City Charter, which is being reviewed right now. It allowed for the petitioning anti-abortion rights groups to get enough signatures to put the ordinance before the Lubbock City Council. After consulting with legal experts, the council unanimously voted against the ordinance, but the city's charter allows a path for a citizen-led ordinance to go to a public vote if the petitioning group pursues it. So even after the city council completely denied this ordinance, the petitioning group was able to go get signatures of a certain percentage of people registered to vote in Lubbock and turn those back into the city, which then led to this getting put on a ballot. So even after it's been voted down by the city council, that's how we got to today. And it's been a really interesting path to get there, in particular that city council meeting where they voted against it. It was an interesting meeting. So you were actually in the room that night. Talk a little bit about what that November city council meeting was like.
So that meeting spanned over, I think it was something like 6 hours. I know I entered the building and sat down at the very back of the room with the rest of the press, I think at like 4:30, 4:45, and I didn't move really from that position until at least midnight. At the time, there was 150 people who signed up to speak. 87 of those people spoke. The vast majority were in favor of the ordinance. Around 10, less than 10, were against the ordinance who spoke physically at the meeting. However, this was at the height of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And so they offered a virtual option of people submitting email statements. And of 498 email statements, 473 were against the ordinance. So that was pretty significant.
And those were made available online. Yes. So I was following along at home. I watched through the city's live stream on their website, and I was able to kind of go through those comments as the city council meeting was actually happening as well. So, I mean, we really got a diverse range of views during that city council hearing.
Yes, and at the public hearing, they made a note. Normally, they would need to read all of those statements out loud at those public hearings. And I think it was Dan Pope who was basically like, we would be here for 24 hours if we read all through all of these. So it wasn't really an option that night. We were there long enough. So over the span of 6 hours, we heard a lot of public testimony, a lot of anti-abortion sentiment. A lot of it was very emotionally charged. A lot of it was backed by religious beliefs. The public hearing wound down around midnight. The city council members each gave their own takeaway from the night. They gave their opinion on the ordinance and their opinions on what they heard that night. And each one of them had a very interesting takeaway. All of them agreed, though, that this was unenforceable and this was unconstitutional. So unanimously, the city council agreed to vote this down. And because of this charter amendment, like you mentioned, Sarah, those leading this initiative were able to bring it to a public vote. So yeah, here we are. From the beginning, city council and the mayor, they were not in favor of adopting this ordinance. And several of the city council members and the mayor are against abortion. So you would think that they would support an abortion ban in their city. Why did they vote against this?
I think each council person had their specific reasons, but ultimately it came down to legal advice. The city hired an outside firm to really look at this, and the ordinance has ultimately been described as unconstitutional. If passed, it could lead to costly lawsuits for the city. And another thing that was brought up a lot is that abortion really isn't a local issue. Abortion rights issues are usually taken up at a state or federal level of government. So again, in so many ways, the situation we have here in Lubbock right now is unprecedented. There's just not a lot of you don't see issues like this bubble up at a local level like we have in this situation.
And Mary Tuma is going to join me a little bit later to talk about what is actually going on in the state level. But talking about where this type of battle is usually fought, I want to go back to that November public hearing and play Councilmember Randy Christian's take on this ordinance. I found his particularly interesting because he clearly stated that he's anti-abortion. And he did a lot of digging into this ordinance and sought a lot of advice from folks, even outside the city. Here's what he had to say.
The real battlefield for the legislation that can save lives of the unborn is in Austin, Texas, and Washington, D.C. My good, God-fearing, passionate, pro-life fellow citizens of our great city, if there was a constitutional pro-life ordinance, my fellow citizens, I would not hesitate but to sign it immediately. But that's not the case as long as Roe v. Wade is the law of the land. In closing, I believe as long as Roe v. Wade is in place, this ordinance is unconstitutional, enforceable, unenforceable, and costly to our city. If the citizens want this ordinance on the books, then let's take it to the vote. Let's take it to the ballot in May. We have 260,000 plus other citizens that should have the opportunity to cast a vote up or down on this issue. Ultimately, the will of the people will decide this issue. Lastly, I am pro-life, but I also have a sworn duty to follow the law. That's important for all of us to follow the law. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
So the city released the findings from their legal counsel. I'll link to that on the web post for this episode. You can check that out at radio.kttz.org. Now, before we take a break, it is worth noting that while this ordinance does provide a pathway for individuals to sue abortion providers and those who assist a woman in obtaining an abortion, whether that's financially or through a ride or what have you, it does not allow for an individual to sue a woman for obtaining an abortion. Lubbock citizens do get to vote on whether or not the city should adopt this ordinance, regardless of Roe v. Wade being in place. When we come back, we're going to talk about the legality of this ordinance. Is it enforceable or not? That question really isn't as simple as it seems. Stay with us. Welcome back to Listen in Lubbock. I'm Casey Ellingson, and I'm in the studio with Sarah Self-Walbrick, our senior reporter. We just talked about the proposed Sanctuary City for the Unborn ordinance. So everyone out there is aware, early voting on this issue is currently underway. You can learn more on the web post for this episode at radio.kttz.org. As we mentioned, Planned Parenthood reopened in the fall. They didn't immediately start offering abortion services, but that changed last week, which was interesting timing considering this ordinance was heading to a public vote at the same time, pretty much. Sarah, you spoke with Sarah Wheat from Planned Parenthood of Greater Texas this week. Did she elaborate on the timeline of this?
Yeah, Sarah Wheat said that the goal was always to offer abortion services early this year. She said Planned Parenthood was fulfilling their promise to the community by making that available. So medication abortions are now another service offered at the Lubbock Health Center. To be clear, that is just medication abortions, not a surgical abortion.
So when I talked to Sarah from my coverage back in the fall following this issue, she had mentioned that when Planned Parenthood closed in 2013 due to a number of legislative decisions, there were no abortion providers west of I-35. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty big chunk of Texas. Mm-hmm. So now that Planned Parenthood is back in Lubbock and is offering abortion services, the medical abortion services, this brings me to the biggest question surrounding this ordinance. Is it enforceable?
I think that really depends on who you ask. Again, at this point, there's really no other city that's been through this exact process. Lubbock would be the first city, if this ordinance passes, Lubbock would be the first city with an actual abortion provider to kind of test it out. So it's really unclear what this is going to look like legally if this passes. So the groups advocating for the ordinance say that it is enforceable. There are a couple of different kind of caveats to that. There's a really good detailed article in the Lubbock Avalanche Journal this past weekend, which we'll link to online at radio.kttz.org. But that article states that the public enforcement aspect of this bill doesn't go into effect unless Roe v. Wade is overturned.
So that means like police, the city.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But private citizens would be able to sue people and entities involved in an abortion. So as you previously said in this episode, you know, that opens up a lot of people to potential lawsuits. So the abortion provider, anyone who is involved with that process would be liable if this ordinance passes.
Another really big question and a narrative that's been circulating is that this ordinance would be costly to the city and to the Lubbock taxpayers. If it passes and if an abortion provider or citizen is in fact sued by a private party, at what point would this become financially burdensome on Lubbock taxpayers?
There's a difference in the kind of cases this would be. In the ordinance, we see the personal enforcement aspect, which is the only way this could be enforced, given the standing federal protections. So that would be a civil lawsuit between private parties, basically a person and possibly, you know, a clinic or a doctor. This ordinance also makes the city liable. So there's a good chance that someone could come in and sue the city for just having this on the books, basically. And that's what we could see become a bigger national story. The city would not be involved in these individual lawsuits. This would be kind of a separate but obviously related situation.
That clarifies things a little bit. And it's important to note that that could ultimately actually fall on the city to front the bill on something like this.
Yeah, absolutely. I think another question that was highlighted in that article from the Lubbock Avalanche Journal is it's still kind of unclear when this all would go into effect if it passes. Again, this is all contingent on what happens after the May 1st vote. So one of the most comparable examples that we have here locally is from 2009 when Lubbock County voted to go wet, to allow alcohol sales in county limits. And that was voted on also in a May election. It didn't actually go into effect until September, though, I believe. So several months. So that could, if this passes, I mean, there is some time to kind of figure out what that's going to look like. But really, at this point, there are just so many questions, I think, surrounding this issue.
Talking about this current election, do you have any idea of what voter turnout is looking like right now?
It's been pretty strong so far. So we're only a few days into early voting, but compared to other May elections in odd years, going back to 2009 is really the only kind of comparable example, which I think is interesting. You know, mm-hmm. In Lubbock, Texas, which is historically a more conservative community, that these two issues, one about allowing alcohol in city limits, the other about abortion rights and abortion access. It's interesting to me that these are the issues that seem to be getting voters out. So again, we'll see what happens over the next few days in the actual voting process on this. But so far, voter turnout has been very strong. And it's worth noting, I mean, this is the only thing that's on the ballot. If you live in the Lubbock Cooper School District, they have a school bond. But because this is being voted on by city residents and not county residents. I mean, it's interesting that this is really, I mean, people are coming out to vote just on this issue, and we're seeing really high voter turnout given the specific cycle that we're voting on this in. So it's been interesting to see that.
So this is obviously such a divisive topic. You really can't talk about it without bringing in emotions or religious beliefs. Let's talk about the two camps that are campaigning around town for this vote. I'm seeing a lot of signs around town, outside of homes, outside of churches and businesses. Who's campaigning and what are the tactics that you're seeing?
I think tactics-wise, it's similar to what you see during any political campaign. A lot of signs. We've seen a lot of heavy social media use. I've seen some ads on local TV, things like that. But I think one of the more interesting things, Lubbock famously has a lot of churches. You know, there used to be an old joke that there's a bank or a church on every corner in Lubbock. And a lot of them have signs supporting the ordinance in front of their sanctuaries. I've seen some confusion about how they're able to do that. So I wanted to note that, like, as a nonprofit organization, churches are not supposed to endorse specific candidates, but it is okay for them to advocate for legislation or an ordinance or something like that that aligns with the congregation's beliefs. So I thought that was really important to note, because I've seen a lot of questions about kind of why churches are getting involved.
Yeah, definitely. And church involvement has been something we've seen since the very beginning of this. My understanding is that this was a huge factor in how the group pushing for this ordinance was able to gather so many signatures on that initial petition. They were able to go in person to churches. That was at the height of the pandemic, and that's when so many people were staying home. So it's really not that surprising to see them still involved with this issue, because for many, it is religious and it is very emotional.
It doesn't matter what side you're on. This is an emotionally charged issue. Everyone has a thought on this, and it comes from a very personal place. So I think that's been the big thing that I've seen with kind of tactics from both sides. It's gotten so emotionally charged so quick. I don't know. That's just the issue at hand. I have a very bad habit of reading the comments. As a journalist, you're told not to do that. But I like to look through Facebook comment sections just to get a gauge on what people in Lubbock and what my audience are thinking about things. So I've seen a lot of very heated arguments, specifically in Facebook comment sections about this specific issue. And it gets so personal and so hateful so quick, and that's on both sides of it. It's mm-hmm. just, I think it's interesting that this is truly, I don't know, it's just such an emotionally charged issue that we've seen bubble up.
It's going to be very interesting to see what the outcome of this is, not only whether or not this will pass, but what would it mean for Planned Parenthood, and more importantly, what would happen if someone tries to sue a doctor for providing an abortion. As I said, I know the ACLU will be watching this closely if it does pass.
Yeah. So, you know, we're a few days into early voting. I'm frankly, I have no idea which way this is going to go. I think the future of this is pretty unclear in a lot of ways, whether the city votes against this ordinance and what happens next, or if the city votes for this ordinance. I think there's a lot of questions either way about what this issue looks like going forward in Lubbock.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to take a short break. When I come back, we're going to hear from Mary Tuma, who's a freelance journalist covering reproductive rights in Texas. Her work has been featured in outlets like Vice, The Texas Observer, Huffington Post. She'll be joining me from Austin to talk about what's going on a statewide level regarding reproductive rights after the break. Stay with us. Welcome back to Listen in Lubbock. I'm your host, Casey Ellingson, and reporter Mary Tuma is now joining me by phone from Austin. We just spoke with Sarah about the Sanctuary City for the Unborn ordinance that's currently being voted on. Now we're going to shift our focus a little bit to what's going on a state level. As I mentioned, Mary is a freelance journalist, and her focus is specifically on reproductive rights in Texas. She's written for outlets like the Texas Observer, Vice, Huffington Post, and the Austin Chronicle. She's been reporting on the current legislative session that's currently underway in Austin. Let's start with the general tone of the session when it comes to abortion and reproductive rights. What's that looking like?
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on, Casey. I appreciate it. Yeah, there's been about 50 anti-abortion bills filed this session, and pro-choice advocates are calling it one of the worst, if not the worst, session for reproductive rights in recent memory. And it's made even more challenging when you take into account the barriers to transparency and public input because of COVID-19 health concerns. You know, for instance, the Senate didn't even offer virtual testimony during its committee debate over a group of anti-choice bills in March, you know, leaving many of those pro-choice voices totally out of the conversation.
Speaking of the tone, how is it different from previous sessions? And like, what kind of impact does that have on laws that come out of these sessions?
Unlike other recent sessions, rather than hide behind this sort of pretense of protecting the health and safety of women, as they have so many times done in the past, anti-abortion bill authors have kind of squarely and unabashedly targeted abortion this session.
And there, you mentioned a specific quote from one of the bill authors. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. During a recent House Public Health Committee hearing on a number of these anti-choice bills, a representative who was one of the bill authors said very pointedly, with complete transparency, abortion is not healthcare. Abortion is not a service. Abortion, quite frankly, is murder. So they've laid bare their intentions, which again is a little bit different than what we've seen in the past with a lot of the pretense and guise of protecting the health and safety of women with these bills.
Looking through your reporting, one bill jumped out at me that has very similar language to the Sanctuary City for the Unborn Ordinance, and that's Senate Bill 8. There's a lot to this proposed bill, but the part that jumped out was the fact that it would allow for private parties to sue abortion providers. Can you talk about this bill and some of the others that have come up?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are a handful of very extreme measures, including, as you mentioned, SB8. That is priority legislation for Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick. It would ban abortion at 6 weeks. So in effect, the potential law would amount to a near total ban, as most women don't even realize they're pregnant that early on. There's also no exceptions for rape or incest. And to your point about individual parties suing, that's a great point, and it's what kind of makes this bill even more dangerous in a way. You know, while this law has been struck down, passed and struck down in about 10 other states, Texas Republicans, kind of seeing the writing on the wall of how this law has been struck down, added language in the bill to give the state immunity from lawsuits and kind of grant this sort of breathtaking authority to any individual and private actor to sue an abortion provider. I mean, they don't even have to be directly related to the patient. And those that sue can challenge not just abortion providers, right? But anyone who aids and abets the procedure. So that could mean abortion support organizations that try to help, you know, low-income women obtain the procedure in the face of all of these like state-imposed barriers. Another bill could force women to give birth to non-viable fetuses by removing the exception in Texas's 20-week abortion ban for severe abnormalities. And, you know, of course, this is, you know, the women that are going to be affected by this are already experiencing a very difficult, heart-wrenching decision. And they will feel even more pain and suffering, according to, you know, pro-choice advocates and those that, you know, had this experience and testified recently at the ledge. And there's also another piece of priority legislation for Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, and that's the so-called trigger bill, which would completely bar abortion and add severe criminal penalties for abortion providers in the event that the U.S. Supreme Court overturns or severely chips at Roe v. Wade. And those three, you know, very extreme bills have been wrapped into one, the six-week abortion ban, the fetal abnormality exception ban, and an outright ban to take effect no later than 2025 in a bill authored by Lubbock State Senator Charles Perry, and that's SB 1647.
Yeah, that's quite a bit going on. What are the statuses of the bills in the ledge right now?
In short, they're moving along pretty quickly at the ledge, but there is still about a month and a half or about 5 weeks left of session. So there's still some time for pushback.
Now, this is kind of a tricky question, but you've been following reproductive rights in the state for a while, so you've seen these types of bills unfold. As you're aware, Planned Parenthood recently returned to Lubbock and just last week began offering abortion services. How do bills like these ones you outlined play out in real life?
Right. So there is usually a long protracted legal challenge to these bills that could take literally years to settle. And in the meantime, even if the law does get struck down, eventually a lot of collateral damage has been done to abortion providers. You know, for instance, we are still seeing the impact of 2013's HB2, which shuttered about half the state's abortion clinics, including, as your listeners know, Lubbock's. And a recent study by the Texas Policy Evaluation Project showed that the law, even though it was eventually struck down by the Supreme Court in 2016, still has a lasting legacy, including forcing the number of out-of-state abortions to rise. There are certainly long-term repercussions to these bills that disproportionately harm the most vulnerable among us, which is low-income women and women of color. So the reproductive health safety net in Texas is fragile already, and it is difficult to access abortion here, especially in rural areas because of these past laws. So any new law that comes along has the potential to just completely topple this already fragile network.
Now, we're running out of time. Thank you, Mary. I'll provide links to some of Mary's coverage on the Texas Legislator on our web post for this episode, as well as other useful information about this topic. You can find that and stream all previous episodes of Listen in Lubbock at radio.kttz.org. And as a reminder, early voting is currently underway for the city of Lubbock to vote on the Sanctuary City for the Unborn Ordinance. I'd like to thank my guests, freelance journalist Mary Tuma, and our senior reporter, Sarah Self-Walberg. Join me each Friday at 10:30 for Listen in Lubbock. For the Texas Tech Public Media Newsroom, I'm Casey Ellingson.